I'm going to tell you a story. I've been wanting to tell this story all weekend, but I've been afraid to. I mean, you know how my stories are. They're not very good. But this one I've been thinking hard about. And this is Midget Logger. This little midget logger, he went up into the north country, up in the woods, and he wanted to get a job as a logger. So he went into the woods and asked this fellow, so where's the logging boss? And he said, well, there's a Swede over there. He's about 6'7". You can't hardly miss him. So he went over to that Swede and pulled on his breeches leg. He looked down and said, what do you want, little fella? He said, well, I want a job. He said, I want a job as a logger. He said, we don't hire midgets here. He said, I didn't come here to get a job as a midget. I come here to get a job as a logger. And I'm a good one, too. He said, I don't think you are. He said, take that axe and jump on that bull pine over there, which was about 6 foot on the stump. And he went over there, and man, the chips just flew. The Swede went over and said, man, I've been in the woods all of my dang life, and I've never seen anybody handle an axe the way you do. What'd you learn to handle an axe like that? And he said, well, when I was a little fella, my daddy took me out of that Mojave forest, and we cut wood from sun up to sundown, day in, day out, year in, year out. And when you do anything like that, you get good at it. He said, wait a minute, little fella. So I thought the Mojave was a desert. He said, well, it is now.
I think he did a little better with that one, don't you?
Yeah. I had to think long and hard to come up with a good one.
We've talked a lot over the weekend about alcoholism and the history of AA and how long alcoholism has been around and so on and so forth. I've got a little thing I want to read to you this morning to kind of to indicate maybe how long it's been here in the States. And this is a little story about the USS Constitution. So on August the 23rd, 1779, the USS Constitution set sail from Boston with 475 officers and men on board. She had 48,600 gallons of fresh water, 7,400 cannon shot, 11,600 pounds of black powder, and 79,000 gallons of rum. She had permission to harass and destroy English shipping. Making Jamaica on October the 6th, she took on 825 pounds of flour and 68,300 gallons of rum. Then she headed for the Azores, where she arrived on November the 12th. She provisioned with 550 pounds of beef and 54,300 gallons of Portuguese wine. On November the 18th, she set sail for England. In the ensuing days, she defeated 5 British men of war, captured and scuttled 15 English merchantmen, salvaging only the rum. By January 27th, her powder and shot were exhausted. Unarmed, she made a night raid up the Firth of Clyde, and her landing party captured a whiskey distillery and transferred 40,000 gallons of whiskey aboard before dawn. Then she headed for home. USS Constitution arrived in Boston Harbor in February 1780 with no cannon shot, no food, no powder, no rum, no whiskey, no wine, and 48,600 gallons of stagnant water. Been around a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah. My name is Joe, and I'm a real alcoholic.
Hi, Joe.
Through God's grace, the program works. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since the 10th of March, 1962. Good to be here this morning. For I found everybody's telling this story. I had one of my favorites I heard lately. I got accused of telling a new one. Well, this is about a couple that went to the doctor. And the fellow walked in and told the doctor, said, Doctor, I would just like to... I know it's a strange request, but I'd like you to watch us have sex and see if it's all right. He said, I never had a request like that, but I guess it's all right. So they went in and they had sex, and he watched. He said, hey, y'all did all right. And he said, okay, and they left, and they come back the next Wednesday. I said, Doctor, I'd like for you to have us watch us have sex again. He said, what is this? This is strange. Why are y'all showing up here for that? He said, well, doctor, he said,
We can't go to her house. You see, she's married. And we can't go to my house because I'm married. So the Holiday Inn wants almost $100. And say, you just charge $25 a visit. He said, Medicare pays $20 of that. And AARP pays $4.50. And don't cost us for 50 cents to come here.
So are we getting spiritual this morning?
Oh,
all right. We finished up our session yesterday with the promises. And as we talked about those promises, we said, of course, that they all were in the mind, nothing to do with the body at all. And if we had received all those promises in our minds, then surely we had undergone a great change in our personality. We came here restless, irritable, discontented, filled with shame, fear, guilt, and remorse. And if we've gone from that state of mind to the state of mind that's in the promises itself, then surely we have undergone a great change in our personality. Probably we have undergone a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening, because that's what spiritual experience or spiritual awakening is defined as, the personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism. So if that's true, then why do we need the last three steps? A lot of people in AA will tell us that the last three steps are maintenance steps to maintain our sobriety. And we don't really believe that's true. You see, the word maintenance itself is a misnomer. In order to maintain something, that means you keep it as is. Another natural law applies here that says nothing in our universe ever stays as is. Everything in our universe is in a constant state of change. It's either growing or it's dying, it's progressing, it's regressing. Nothing ever remains the same. So if we tried just to maintain what we had received at the end of step 9 through the promises, then sure enough, we would begin to slip back. And next thing you know, we start having trouble with people. Next thing you know, we start having trouble with ourselves. Next thing you know, we're blocked off from God. Next thing you know, we end up drunk all over again. Now, we've made a tremendous amount of growth through these first 9 steps. But if we try to remain exactly there and maintain that particular status, then sooner or later we're going to get into trouble. You know, twice in the big book, once in Bill's story, once in chapter 2, he talks about a fourth dimension of existence that we never even dreamed of, period. Far, far beyond the normal three. The normal three, we got well in those three through the first 9 steps. But there's another existence, a fourth dimension, that if we can get on into it, then we become absolutely free of practically all these things that have bothered us all of our life. And we like to look at the last three steps, 10, 11, and 12, not just as maintenance steps. We'll agree that they'll help us stay sober, but we really like to look at them as growth steps intended to continue our spiritual growth, intended to continue our relationship with God and our fellow man, not only continue them, but improve on them until we move into an entirely new dimension of living. So this morning we'd like to, for just a few minutes, take a little look at 10, 11, and 12, see if we can't see the actual growth factor in those three steps. Joe?
Page 84. This thought brings us to step 10. But suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commit this way of living as we clean up the past. We have entered the world of spirit.
We've had a spiritual experience or spiritual awakening already.
Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness.
Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness, not remain where we are, not maintain, but to actually grow in understanding and effectiveness.
This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear.
Well, what step did we use to look at that in the first place? Anybody remember? Step four. Okay.
Yeah. So it means the continuous step four. When they cropped up, we asked God to remove them.
What steps did we use for that?
Six and seven.
Six and seven, okay.
We continue to use six and seven. We discussed them with someone immediately.
What step was that?
Step five.
We continue step five. I make them in quickly if we were harmed anyone.
What steps did we use there?
Eight and nine.
Steps eight and nine, okay.
So according to the book, step 10 is a continuous practice of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 on a daily basis. Now, if you were to continue to use those, you would not remain the same. You would improve. You would have to grow.
The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous appeared to the world for the first time in the big book Alcoholics Anonymous in 1939. Sometime after that, AA made a bad mistake. They took the steps out of the book. They put them on little wallet cards that we carry in our wallets and our purses. They put them on wall charts and hung them up on the wall. Now, taking the steps out of the book and hanging them on the wall and putting them on the wall of wallet cards was not the mistake. The mistake was that when they took the steps out of the book and put them on the wall charts and the wallet cards, they left the directions on how to work them in the book. And people come to an AA meeting, they see the steps up on the wall, they read them, they interpret what they mean in their minds, and they try to work the steps accordingly. And we're going to find there's a big difference in the interpretation of step 10, especially, from the wall chart to the big book itself. You read step 10 off the wall chart, it says continue to take personal inventory, and we were wrong, promptly admitted it. But it looks like the only thing we have to do to fulfill the intent of step 10 from the wall chart is continue to take inventory. When we're wrong, promptly admit it, and we will have completed step 10. Somewhere we got the idea that you don't even need to do that till you go to bed at night. Now, Joe and I, we both agree we have reached the age where we don't get in trouble in bed much anymore.
That's Charlie and Joe.
This Joe is younger. I think he's still having a little difficulty with that once in a while, but Joe and I don't have any problem. Our problem is during the daytime.
Walking around, dang it.
We don't need any going. We don't need any going to bed kind of deal there. We need a walking around step for us. I've got that little inventory sheet right up here in my forehead, and I can see it just plain as day, and you guys can too. What I have finally learned to do is if I get screwed up, say, at 10 o'clock in the morning, it really doesn't make any sense to stay screwed up all day long, waste another day in resentments and etc., and wait till I go to bed at night to do something about it. Besides that, if I get screwed up at 10 o'clock in the morning and I don't do something about it right then, by nighttime I'm an absolute basket case. I've cussed two or three people out, and two or three's cussed me out, and we're in a hell of a shape by nighttime. What I finally learned to do is if I get screwed up about 10 o'clock, it's to stop whatever I'm doing, get off in the corner by myself, and say, okay, Charlie, who are you mad at? What did they do to you? Which part of self is affected? What did you do, if anything, to set this in motion? Which character defect has come back to the surface? Always selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, frightened, or inconsiderate, and one of those character defects has come back. I can spot it immediately. I can say, okay, God, you know I don't want to be this way. Please take this selfishness away from me, or this dishonesty, or whatever it might be. Discuss it with someone immediately, as soon as I can, preferably my sponsor, and then make amends quickly if I've harmed anyone. In just a matter of a few minutes, that whole deal is gone. The rest of the day is peaceful and happy and free. I would defy anybody in this room to work step 10 the way the big book says to work it and stay the way you are. You absolutely cannot do that. As we continue to take personal inventory, we learn more about ourselves. As we discuss these things with someone else, we learn more about ourselves. As we ask God to remove these things, they become less and less. As we make amends quickly to people we've harmed, our relationship with the world and everybody in it becomes better and better and better and better and better. There's no way that we can work step 10 the way the big book says to work it and stay the way we are. Once in a great while, though, I don't want to do that. There are times that I kind of like to be screwed up. There's times I like to be mad. There's times I like to be afraid, because I can use that to rationalize and justify saying and doing things I shouldn't be saying and doing. At the same token, saying and doing, but not doing things that I ought to be doing. Today I realize when I'm that way, it gives me a comfortable feeling of superiority. But I don't enjoy it like I used to. Somewhere about the middle of it, I catch myself and say, "Okay, idiot, you're doing it to yourself again. It is your responsibility to determine whether you're going to be screwed up or whether you're not going to be screwed up." Step 10 is an actual growth step.
You know, and the book goes on to say that love and tolerance of others is our code. You know we had a code, didn't you? Love and tolerance of others is our code. And then we get some more promises as a result of practicing 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 over and over and over. And it says, "And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned." And remember, we said real early Thursday that the problem is that we are powerless over alcohol, and that our lives have become unmanageable. The solution was that we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, we get our sanity back on page 84 as a result of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He said, "For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally and find this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor had been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. See, we refined the power, and the power would solve the problem. It just comes without any thought or effort on our part." That's a miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We're neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And again, back on page 45, it said, "The main object of this book, which enabled me to find a power greater than myself, which would solve my problem." And beginning there from page 59, we had the third step, steps 3 through 9. We worked the steps. As a result of that, we get our sanity back. And this desire to drink, the obsession to drink, has been removed. And I'll never forget when that happened for me. As I said years ago, prior to AA, when I had those enforced times of sobriety, I'd just be thumbing through a magazine, and I'd see a bottle of whiskey with the water running down the side to make me so thirsty my mouth would water. I had a great obsession to drink. That hasn't happened. One day I looked up, and it was just gone. Never to seriously have been tempted since that time. That's the miracle of it. That's what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous.
Now, that's real simple. Sean said, when we have a problem, haven't taken the step, we've been given some tools through 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 to eliminate problems in our lives. And we shouldn't be told that how to reuse these things. We all want to reuse these things every day. And when a problem comes up and I feel uncomfortable, something uncomfortable in my life, I know there's something wrong with me. And if there's something wrong with me, I have tools to work on. If it's somebody, if I can lay it off on somebody else, I'm in trouble. Because I ain't got no tools to work on them. But my main rule, personal rule, is it's my fault. Thank God it's my fault. Because I can fix me. I have some tools to work on me. So if I'm uncomfortable, I want to be. And as Charlie said, we can run through, the more you practice, practice, practice. It takes practice. the more you practice, the better you can. You can spot it real quick. What's your basic instinct has been? I don't have to do the first two columns. I have to do what's wrong with me, what's being hurt. And I can spot it right away. And then I can say, what's the defect have you got? And I can spot that right away. And I can take care of that and have a good day. You know, I like to go around and watch people. I love people today. I'm very interested in people. All kinds of people, not just alcoholics. I like to go in grocery stores and work my step 10 in the checkout line. And watch them fool-ass people run from line to line. They'll be running from line to line. Ain't gonna do nothing, ain't going nowhere. And they get all upset and mess the lines all up. And I like standing there and reading them stupid books, you know. And you know, when you get outside, all them is out there in the car at the same time. Ain't nothing. But it's great, you know, and we can live better than most people, but we have to work at it. It's not a gift. It's not a gift. Step 10 is the greatest growth step of my life. Most of my growth has come through step 10 on a daily basis. And it can put us in a dimension of living that other people can't be as happy as we are. They don't sleep as well as we can. Because they don't, thank God, I feel sorry for them, they don't have the tools that we have to live with. But it's all up to how we use them and apply them.
You got to be real careful with step 10. Because it's just like step 6 and 7. Now that we know how to use step 10 the way the book says to do it, if we get screwed up in our lives and stay that way, then that must mean that that's the way we want to be. Mm-hmm. You see, we don't have to be that way any longer. If I get mad in the morning and I want to get rid of it, I've got the tools to do it. If I get afraid in the afternoon and I don't want to be that way, I've got the tools to do that. And as I continue practicing these things over and over and over and over, then I continually get better as far as my personality change is concerned. So if I'm screwed up today, I've got to have the full realization that I am responsible for the way I think, for the way I feel, for the way I act, and the way I react. I don't have to do those things any longer if I don't wish to. And slowly, slowly, slowly through especially 6, 7, and then practicing it over and over and over through step 10, my relationship with God, myself, my fellow man continues to change. An actual growth factor. Page 85, first paragraph.
It says, now it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition, one day at a time. See, it's real easy to let up on this spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. Excuse me. You can only coast downhill. And but if you get by the time you get to here, if you were like me, things are real good in my house. I'm back home, sleeping on the couch. If you're really lucky, you're back in the bedroom. Yeah, it might be. And by this time, the dogs quit biting you. You got a couple of televisions and a car. Yeah, kids are speaking to you. Things are good. Getting a steady paycheck. If you're not careful, things will start competing for your sobriety. We get too busy to ask for help. We get too busy to go to meetings. We get too busy to help other people. And we start to coast back. Things can compete for your sobriety, and they will get your sobriety. I had a friend of mine just recently, when I first got here, he was 29 years sober. Heard that he got drunk, called him, he lives over in Arkansas. I said, come here, what happened? He's a typical thing, been sober 29 years. I got so busy in my work that I didn't have time to go to meetings. I quit asking for help, too busy. Quit helping others, got too busy. And one day, I woke up and it seemed like the most natural thing to do, to take a drink. He didn't even vaguely sense that he was doing anything wrong the way he explained it to me. It just seemed like the most natural thing to do. And that's what happened. And that's what happens in AA a lot of times. Things compete for your sobriety. And things will get your sobriety if you're not careful. And it says here that every day, every day is a day when we must carry a division of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It's the proper use of the will. All this weekend we've been talking about willpower and how it's no good, not good for us. No, we got lots of willpower. You see, but here on page 84 you get your sanity back. Page 85 you get your willpower back. Now, wouldn't it be awful if you didn't, you had your willpower but you didn't have any sanity to know how to operate with? God never gave us anything that was bad. Everything he ever gave us was good. Our willpower is good too, properly used. So these are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It's the proper use of the will. Thy will, not mine, be done. That's the proper use of the will. This next paragraph is one of my favorite in the books. Charlie?
The book says much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction, not suggestion, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we carefully follow directions, not suggestions, if we carefully follow directions, we have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. But we must go further, and that means more action. Now, we're referring here to a God consciousness. We're referring to it as a vital sixth sense. You know, everything I know on a conscious level, I've learned through five senses of direction. I can see, I can smell, I can taste, I can hear, and I can touch. Those are the normal five senses of direction. And we human beings, as we grow up, everything that we learn through those five senses of direction. Now you can take everything that I know that I've learned through my five senses of direction, and you can take everything that these two Joes know, and you can take everything that everybody in this room knows, and you can take everything that every human being on earth knows and add it all together. And it's just a tiny, tiny, tiny speck of information related to the knowledge of the universe. Now, if God has all power, and I'm convinced he does, my book says so. If God has all knowledge, and I'm convinced he does, and if God dwells within each of us, and I'm convinced that he does, the book says he does, that means you and I have within ourselves all the knowledge and all the power that we could ever need to handle any conceivable situation that might come up in the future, provided we know how to tap into that knowledge and that power, that sixth sense of direction that lies within each of us. That's long been known that the way you tap into that knowledge and that power is through prayer and meditation. Most of us, when we get here, we're completely bankrupt in those areas. I knew nothing at all about meditation. Oh, I'd heard that one way to meditate was sit down and listen to soft music. I'd heard another way was to clear your mind of all thought. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I know about me. I've never been able to clear my mind of all thought. When I get up in the morning, that sucker turns on and it runs all day long. I've never been able to stop it. I'd heard about meditation where you chant certain words over and over and over again. I knew nothing about those things. I knew nothing about meditation, period. And even being raised in church, when I got here, I knew very little about prayer. The only thing I knew about prayer, I only had two of them anyhow when I got here. One went like this. It said, "Now lay me down to sleep, or pray the Lord my soul to keep, and if I die," but I'm not into that one anymore. Amen. That's dealing with death, and I'm not too interested in that. The other one I use, and I'm quite sure some of you probably used it too, went like this: "God, If you get me out of this damn mess, I swear I'll never do this again. Now, that was the extent of my knowledge when it comes to prayer and meditation when I came to AA. And now then, my book is saying to me, I'm going to have to develop this sixth sense of direction. I'm going to have to develop it through prayer and meditation. And it would seem to be almost an impossible task for people like me to be able to do that. Thank God Bill Wilson was a real alcoholic. Thank God Bill Wilson felt just exactly the way I felt when I got to AA. Thank God he knew the trouble I was going to have. Because on the next couple of pages, with just a few simple suggestions, he taught me how to pray and he taught me how to meditate so I could receive God's power and God's will in my life and develop this sixth sense of direction. And the longer I do it, the more I practice it, the better it becomes. Step 11 says we sought through prayer and meditation to improve, not maintain, to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Joe?
Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on the matter of prayer. Better men than we use it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. This takes work. It could be very easy to be vague about this matter. Yeah, we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. Now, Bill had to be very careful what he wrote. He had to be careful how he said things. He said it could be very easy to be vague about this matter. He wasn't a spiritual giant at this point. He just barely sober 3 years. He was new at this himself. And he was writing something in a book for people who were going to be spiritually bankrupt. So this is a very difficult task. And he said, I wish I could be vague about this matter, but I'm giving you some definite and valuable suggestions. Now, he does not try to, thank God, he didn't attempt to try to teach us anything about prayer and meditation. He didn't approach it in that way. The way he approached it, he says, I'm going to give you some valuable suggestions. And if you use those suggestions, you will teach yourself a personal life of prayer and meditation. This is the way he does it, and it works. And what he's going to do is, first he's going to tell you what you, and he's, you know, he, this is so simple. Even Alfie can't mess this up. First he's going to tell you what to do at night before you go to bed.
Yeah, there's the nighttime stuff. It's in step 11. It wasn't back in step 10. It's in 11.
The next thing, next paragraph, he's going to tell you what you do when you wake up in the morning. Then he's going to tell you about what's going to why you how you're thinking throughout the day. On page 87, he's going to tell you how to pray. Anybody, and then on the bottom paragraph, he's going to throw in a little few other little small suggestions you might use. Now, anybody would take these two pages. The suggestion on these two pages will give you a life of prayer and meditation if you can practice them. Real simple to do. Hard to mess up. It starts off at night.
Let's see now if we can't see the steps again.
When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Where we were resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid.
There's step 4 again.
Do we owe an apology?
There's step 8 and 9 again.
Have we kept something to ourselves that should discuss another person at once?
There's step 5 again.
Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others? Or what we could pack into the stream of life? Well, we must be careful not to drift in the world or march our marble reflections, but that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, ask God's forgiveness and require what corrective measures should be taken.
There's step 6 and 7 again.
Okay.
So if we do this thing, when we retire at night, if we do this little inventory the way the big book says to do it, then once again, we're really practicing steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9.
Yeah.
twice during the day we've been suggested we do that. Number one, we get screwed up at 10 o'clock in the morning, and again when we go to bed at night. Now, we've made a little inventory sheet a person could use about anything they want to. You could make up your own or whatever. But we made a little inventory sheet which would kind of match what we're trying to do here on page 86 on this suggestion when we retire at night. On that inventory sheet, on the left-hand side of the sheet, we put the personality characteristics of a self-willed human being. And on the other side of the sheet, we put the personality characteristics of a God-willed human being. We went through the big book and the 12 and 12, and we picked out all these character defects that we could find. And, of course, those first four up at the top, all the rest of them really stem from them anyhow. That doesn't take but just a few minutes for me to sit down at night with this thing, run down that sheet, and we see which side of the page I've been on that day. What I'm trying to do is get from the left-hand side to the right-hand side. As I go down through there, some days I'll check some on the left and some on the right. Never do I check entirely on either side. I find also, as time goes by, the check marks change locations. But what I do find over an extended period of time is usually I'm checking more on the right than I'm checking on the left. More and more, the personality difference becomes apparent as I continue to practice the program over and over and over and over and over and over. You could hardly use this little inventory sheet and stay the way you are. The changes are going to continue to take place. Now, John has already mentioned there was a fellow named Carl Sandburg that made a statement a long time ago that when a society fails, there's always one thing present, and that is that they forgot where they came from. And when society forgets where it comes from, then eventually it gets lost out there somewhere. And we as individuals the same way. And if we're going to get lost in our sobriety, in our attempts to change our personality, the way we'll get lost is we'll simply forget where we came from. If we're not reminded over and over and over of these character defects, if we're not reminded of the fact that we need to continue to work on these things, after a while we forget where we came from, we get lost out there also, and we end up going back to drinking. I found this little daily inventory to be one of the most vital parts of my life, to continually remind me every day of just who I am, where I came from, what my character defects are, what I continue to need to work on a daily basis. We'll never get perfect at it, but we can get better and better and better and better and better. It only takes 5 to 10 minutes a night to do this. It doesn't take hardly any time at all. And if you do it over and over and over and over, it gets to be a habit, and it becomes an actual working part of our lives. A very definite, valuable suggestion. Now he tells us what to do when we get up in the morning.
Yeah. He said, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead.
Now, he didn't say 30 minutes after we get up. He said, on awakening.
See, we consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives.
Yeah, this is a thing about a little while. 2 a.m. we get up. We get up in the morning, we're busy people, you know. We get up and we gotta do all this stuff, take a bath, comb my hair. Yeah, I don't take long combing hair.
He carries a hairbrush with him though. He's done it for years.
Yeah. And we do all these great things we got to do. Take care of the dog, the car and everything, take off for the day. Take off at work and never do nothing about the main thing in our lives, our minds. That's what's going to run the whole show. So check it out in the morning. You know. And, you know, my sponsor used to tell me, Joe, you're just like a damn goose. He seen me at 7 o'clock meeting in the morning. I had seen him every morning at 7 o'clock. And there are days he said, Joe, you're just like a damn goose. I said, what are you talking about, goose? You know, goose gets up and squawks and craps and says, here I come, you know, or runs out there and gets batted around all that. You know, why don't you get yourself together before you lead out? And I think that's the great, you know, if we would do something about that and ask God to tell us, ask God to direct our minds, I will. So, this is an invaluable suggestion. The one at night, and Charlie, don't take me, you know, 10 minutes. It takes me just maybe a matter of seconds now to run through that night, look back on that day, and in the morning to prepare myself. It's just been a part of my life. And I've gotten back some days where I've had something going on facing me that day and think about what I had today. And I get to my back door and I open that door. If I don't do that, I open that back door, something. I feel like I'm forgetting something. I'm missing something. And that's what I did. I missed my meditation. I can take care. I can't go out that door if I don't do that.
Let's look at these words again very carefully in that paragraph. He said, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin considering these plans for the day, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives.
Yeah.
Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Now, I had a guy tell me one time, he said, the first thing I do when I get up is I jump on my treadmill. And I said, well, you've got a better bladder than I have. The first thing I do is go to the bathroom. Most of us, that's what we do. We get up and we head for the bathroom first, take care of the body in there. And we go back to the kitchen and we get us a little something to eat. We feed the body, whatever it is we have for breakfast, cereal, toast, bacon, eggs, coffee, or whatever. We take care of the body. Then we go back to the bathroom again. And we fix our faces and we fix our hair. And we got to look real good because we don't want anybody to laugh at us when we leave. And after we get our heads all fixed up on the outside, we go back to the closet and we start picking out our clothes.
Oh, yeah.
Those things that's going to cover the body.
To make sure they match, too.
And we spend lots of time picking out those clothes. They got to be sure that they match and everything looks just perfect. After we get the body all closed, we then probably feed the dog or the cat. We get ready to leave the house, and we make sure we lock up the door. We don't want anybody ripping off our junk while we're gone. We spend a lot of time taking care of all these material things. Then we go outside, and we get to the car, and if most of us will walk around it maybe and see that we've got air in the tires. We get in the car and turn on the switch and make sure there's fuel in it. We start the car, and off we go down the road. Now, we did all those things to take care of the body, to take care of the material things that we own. But what did we do about our mind? The mind's going to run the whole show all day long. Did we take just a few minutes, to check out the air in our minds, to check out the fuel level there? Did we spend just a few minutes to feed the mind itself? A very definite, valuable suggestion. Only takes just a few minutes to do this in the morning. You know, you couple this together with the nighttime inventory. 5 or 10 minutes at night, 5 or 10 minutes in the morning. Let's say a total of 20 minutes throughout the day. Well, you still got 23 hours and 40 minutes to screw it up. You know? It only takes just a few minutes. And what I finally taught myself to do, and it took me years to do this, to get in the habit of it, as part of my morning meditation, I get out the big book. I read step 10. I read step 11. It only takes just a few minutes to do that. And that reminds me every morning of what I'm supposed to do throughout the day. It reminds me to do my prayer and meditation in the morning. It reminds me throughout the day to continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, and etc. I would defy anybody in this room to read step 10 and 11 every morning, do what it says to do throughout that day, and stay the way you are. You absolutely cannot do that. Your relationship with God, yourself, or your fellow man will continue to grow and grow and grow and grow. Now, when we first start doing this, this is not natural for us to do so. And sometimes we forget and we have to go back and remember and force ourselves. But if you do this long enough, day after day after day after, this becomes a habit. What used to be something that we spent no time on at all now becomes a very, very valuable part of our life. To me, it's habitual anymore.
The book says, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, for an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We're often surprised how the right answers come if we try this for a while. You know, the hardest thing in the world for an alcoholic to do is nothing. Sometimes we have these major decisions to make. The thing to do is nothing. Yeah. And it will come, or go out and mow the grass, do something different. In the last 5 years, I've had a lot of major decisions about me and my family and my company and so on and so forth. Lots of major decisions I had to make. Lots of times I didn't know which course to take or what to do. So I would relax and take it easy and go do something else. Mm-hmm. And then I'd be standing around there talking to Charlie or somebody, and the thought would come to me, well, do this and do that. Well, I'd go out and do this and do that. And it all worked out real well in the last 4 or 5 years, primarily because of this particular paragraph. Just take it easy. It'll work out.
You know, this is a form of meditation. And it's a form of meditation for busy, busy, busy people. And we alcoholics are busy, busy, busy people. We don't have time to lay down and listen to soft music. We don't have time to sit around chanting certain words over and over. Oh, we're busy people. And the book says when we face indecision, rather than keep trying to run that thing through our head over and over and over, trying to figure out the answer, when we face indecision, let's just recognize the fact, hell, I don't have the answer. If I had the answer, I wouldn't be facing indecision. And finally, I've learned to stop and say, okay, God, you know I don't have the answer to this one. Give me the right thought. Give me the right direction so that I'll be doing the things according to your will. Relax and take it easy. I don't think it means lay down on the couch. I think what it means is let's get our mind off of that subject. Get it on something else. As long as our mind is on that subject and we're struggling with it, God can't give us any direction. How do I get my mind off of that subject? Well, I go do something else. I go mow the grass. I go paint the house. Go work on the car. Go do something. And after a while, my mind goes back to that subject. And I'm amazed at how often there's information there I didn't have before. Maybe it says, call Joe and see what Joe thinks. Now, I didn't think about that before. When I used to, I'd say, my, wasn't it lucky I thought about calling Joe? No. That information came in my head during this period of meditation time. Mm-hmm. I called Joe, and Joe's got the answer for me. It's absolutely amazing how this happened. This is a form of meditation for busy, busy, busy people. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration, gradually, we've got to work at it over and over and over, gradually, it becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. We intuitively learn how to handle situations which used to baffle us. And this is the way we do it, through this prayer and meditation. Now, we've talked about up to this point meditation. Now then, we're going to talk about prayer. I've always found it odd. The steps said prayer and meditation, but the book talks about meditation first and then about prayer. He will tell us now how to pray.
We usually conclude a period of meditation with a prayer, and be shown all through the day what our next step is to be. Now, we've been given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom for self-will, and are careful never to make requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves so others will be helped. We are careful not to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us are wasting our time doing that. It doesn't work, and we can easily see why. Right now he tells us how to pray. We ought to pray for ourselves. Step 11 says, you know, to pray and meditation, pray only. That's a big word in that step. Now let's see how big that word is. We pray only for God's will for us and the power to carry that out. So I have to focus my prayers. And that was, I had to develop a new prayer life, a brand new complete prayer life, because all I prayed for was me. And I always say, God, you do this, God, give me that, God, do this. And this is the way I was grown up, and this is the way I was raised, and this is the way I was trained to pray. I had old prayer habits. You know, God, do this. My prayer sounded like a list of Santa Claus. John said, tell you about Brother Santa. Brother Santa's the one who taught me how to pray, really, in our church. He sat in the second pew over there every Sunday morning, and from the time I was there, he prayed every Sunday. He was an official prayer for our church. And he had on a brown suit every Sunday morning, it seemed like. Never shall forget. And he'd start off and ask God for everything on the place. And he said, bless the sick and the poor and the shut-in, the ladies' aid, the junior choir, and the senior choir, the pastor, his wife, the president, and his wife. And he just go down a long, long list. And when he finished, he said, Lord, he had one closing message. He said, Lord, that in haste which we have omitted, please grant us that also. Otherwise, we left something out, throw it next in. And you pray like that all your life, you know, And you come to AA, and this guy, the guy that told me that, you know, was working on these guys, it was two or three of them working on me, trying to give me some kind of program. And this one guy was telling me about prayer and meditation. He said, don't ask God for nothing. You don't have to ask for nothing. And I looked at him. I said, man, you must be crazy. These people are worshiping devils. And he happened to be a guy that worked on pinball machines, going around taking the nickels out and putting in fixing them. I said, what in the hell does he know about prayer and meditation? But I have turned. He said, you have turned your will and your life to care of God, and God is directing your life. If that be the case, if you work under God's directions, God's going to take care of you. Okay? So you don't have to ask for anything. God's going to take care of you. Your needs are being managed. Sure, that's right. And I look back on my life and my needs, God's will for me was beyond my imagination. It's constantly been that way in all my life in AA. So I know God's will for me is greater than anything I can imagine. So I wouldn't trade my imagination for God's will with God's imagination for my will. So I don't have to pray for me at all. All I got to do is pray for God's will in my life. And I can ask for something if it's going to benefit other people. And that's been a highly effective part of my life. So prayer is a very simple thing. But we have to develop a healthy prayer line. I had to get out of that, God, give me this, God, give me that, God, give me this. Well, some things I asked for weren't good for me. And I always think about, you know, when I came into, I remember the first time I sensed this, I sold about 10 months. I don't talk about this much, but I ended up in that state hospital. I had 50 cents. Now, I ain't talking about I didn't have no more nowhere else. I didn't own no property. I didn't have none in the bank. I didn't have nothing to show for what I had worked for all those years. I got out of the hospital, went back on the same job, waiting tables. And 10 months later, I was sitting in the bank. I had on a brand new suit, a brand new hat, a brand new pair of shoes, and money in the bank, and $2,000 in the bank. And I was financing a new car. And a man was calling me Mister. And I looked behind me to see who he was talking about. our lives, we can't imagine our lives. But see how we take it for granted, like, you know, we are doing this. God directs care of everything else he directs. He takes care of the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. He said, if I take care of them, surely I will take care of you. We can let him direct our lives. So our lives should be beyond our imagination. A healthy prayer life for us is pray only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. That's all we need is God's will, God's direction.
He's talking about this plane of inspiration here. One time when I was in my early sobriety, I don't know how my radio station got turned to that particular station, but I turned the radio on and driving down the street, and pretty soon I heard this song. I've heard it all of my life, did not understand or know what it meant. And the song was called In the Garden. Do y'all know about the garden, the In the Garden song? We come to the garden alone in the morning while the dew is on the roses. Well, that's a song about prayer and meditation. And I didn't know that. It's just what you're doing it in the morning before you get out and get busy. And I understood that song that morning just as plain as day. And I had never heard that song before that way. We come to rely upon it. It's a plane of inspiration that we begin to be able to see things. You know, this fellow over here in this picture on the left, named Wesley Parrish, it was his idea to do this seminar a long time ago. And I've given Wesley credit for this a time or two, and I'm going to give him credit for it this morning, and I'm not going to give him credit anymore. But Wesley said that communication is the beginning of all understanding. Communication is the beginning of all understanding. Thursday at noon when we got here, we didn't know each other very well, did we? Not really. We've been meeting in the halls and talking and sharing and doing these things. And today you know us better and we know you better because we've been talking and listening to each other. Communication is the beginning of all understanding. Now, if that would work with you and I, wouldn't that work with God?
Yeah.
Talking and listening to God. Communication. And then we will know him better and he will know us better. It works the same way.
They came to me and they said, Charlie, you pray only for knowledge of his will for you and the power to carry that out. I said, how the hell is he going to know what I want if I don't tell him? And they said, he's not interested in what you want. He's interested in what you need. They said, Charlie, you've been trying to get what you want all your life. And you've almost destroyed yourself in the process. They said, there's no way that God can hurt you any worse than you've hurt yourself. They said, all you need is knowledge of God's will and the power to carry that out. And I'm like Joe. If they had said to me, now make a list of what you think you need and want, we'll give it to you, but we're never going to give you anything else. If I had made that list of what I needed and wanted, I would have cheated myself. Because God's given us so much more. You know, we can sit here and talk all day about the things we've seen, the places we've been, what's happened in our lives for the last several years. By the time we got through with it, you probably wouldn't believe us because it's absolutely amazing the things that have transpired simply because we're trying to do God's will and we're asking for the power to carry that out. Nothing complicated about prayer and meditation at all. Prayer is nothing more than talking to God. Meditation is nothing more than being still and listening to what he has to say. There don't have to be any big fancy ways to do it. You know, I talk to him as a friend. I talk to him as my old buddy. And he and I get along just great. This thing really does work.
It says here, if a circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. It's been about 15 or 18 years ago. One morning I was sitting in my recliner reading my little inspirational books. Phyllis was sitting in her recliner reading her inspirational books. And she said, "Honey," I said, "Yes." "I wonder what this is going to cost." She said, "No, you old fool," said, "would you read this page and explain it to me?" I said, "Well, sure, I can do that." So I read her little inspirational book and I explained it to her. A lot more than she wanted to know. And the next morning she said, "Would you read this page here and explain it to me?" And I said, "Sure." And I read it and we explained it and we talked about it. Well, it began a little morning of prayer and meditation together. I would have never thought about that. You women have to help us. We don't think that way, generally.
How long has it been since you and Phyllis have had a divorce?
Yeah, see, I've heard you. Those people that pray together stay together. I've heard that all my life. We haven't had a divorce in 25 years. Yeah. But I still call her my current wife. Just to keep her on her toes a little bit. Just
page 87, bottom of the page. Yeah. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful. We ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves that we are no longer running the show. No. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." Now here's the results. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily. We're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we're trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. And here's the shortest paragraph in the big book. It works. It really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined. I think that's another understatement of the year. So we let God discipline us the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There's action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. And we're not going to try to go through the next chapter. It takes too long. So we'll talk very briefly about it. Like some of the other steps, step 12 is a definite multiple part step. Three distinct parts in it. The first part of it is the greatest promise to be found anywhere in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. I think that's a promise to me. That if I will apply these first 11 steps in my life to the best of my ability, that I'm guaranteed I'm going to have a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But in either case, it will result in a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. I think that's one of the greatest promises to be found anywhere in this book. But the old adage, the old saying of you can't get something for nothing, that you have to pay back for what you receive, holds true here too. Because after having had the spiritual awakening as the result of the first 11 steps, we are then charged with a responsibility. And the responsibility is to carry this message, T-H-I-S. Not the message, not a message, this message. This message to other alcoholics. Now, what is this message? Well, this message is contained in the first part of that step. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, I am no longer what I used to be. The only message we really have to carry to the newcomer is the message contained in the first part, step 12. Now, some of us get to thinking we're healers. Some of us get to thinking we're marital advisors, economic advisors. I don't know anybody in the world that screwed that up worse than we did. Yet we feel we can advise others in those areas. Now, we don't know much about that. But I'll tell you what we do know about. We are the world's experts on alcoholism. You and I and the two Joes and Willie and et cetera. We know more about alcoholism than anybody alive, period. We are the world's experts on recovery from alcoholism. We know more about that than anybody alive. We're the only people that's ever done it. And God has given us the unique knowledge to avert death in countless thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people. As I look back at the beginning of AA, it's apparent to me that God got tired of seeing people like us die from alcoholism. I really believe He's always worked with people through people. I really believe He picked out Dr. Jung. He picked out Roland Hazard. He picked out Eddie Thatcher. He picked out Dr. Shelfworth. He picked out Bill Wilson. He picked out Dr. Bob. He picked out the first 100 so that you and I could have today recovery from alcoholism. Now, if you pick people out in the 1930s, and they're all dead now, every one of them's gone. If you pick people out in the 1930s, then surely He's still picking people out today. There's not an alcoholic in this room that ought to be here. Every one of us ought to be dead. Some of us 2, 3, or 4 times. And we used to say, my God, wasn't we lucky last night? I don't think luck had a thing to do with it. I think God picked you out. I think He let you suffer your alcoholism so you'd know what He wants you to know. And when He got ready to use you, He removed the obsession to drink. They tell me like something like 97 out of 100 alcoholics are going to die not even knowing they're alcoholic. About 3% of us stumble into AA. Hell, less than 1 out of 3 is recovering in AA. We're talking about the possibility of 1 out of 100. Surely, 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 we're here for a purpose. And the message we have to carry goes like this. If you're an alcoholic and you're still drinking, if you're an alcoholic and you're not drinking but you don't feel good, we know just exactly where you're coming from. That's where we used to be too. We came to AA. We found the big book. We found a program of recovery. We applied the first 11 steps in our lives to the best of our ability. We've had a spiritual awakening and we're not that way anymore. And if you don't want to be that way, then you do what we did. And let us help you as you do it. And you'll have a spiritual awakening and you'll not be that way any longer either. That's the only message that Alcoholics has got, that Alcoholics Anonymous has got. But we are the experts at that message. The final thing I have to do in step 12 is practice these principles. Try to practice these principles in all my affairs. What are the principles? Oh, we hear all kinds of arguments all the time about these principles. I really think in step 12, Bill had already used the word steps once. He didn't want to repeat it and use it twice, so he called them principles. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message and practice these principles in all our affairs. It's easy for me to practice the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in AA. I love you and I hope you love me, and we're going to do our best not to hurt each other. But I'm only in AA at the most 1 or 2 hours a day. What do I do the other 22, 23 hours of the day? Do I practice these steps out there? Do I practice these steps, these principles in my home with my spouse? Do I realize how powerless I really am over that lady? Do I realize the insanity of trying to control her, knowing full well I can't? Can I make a decision, turn her will and her life over to the care of God as I understand Him? Can I inventory me and find those things within me that keep trying to control? Can I talk about that to another human being? Can I be willing to turn loose of those character defects? Can I make amends to her quickly when I've harmed her? There's times I'm ashamed of me. There's times I treat absolute strangers on the street with more courtesy than I treat my own wife in my own home. Just think, if I could practice these steps there with her and she with me, well, we might pick up 10, 12, 14, 16 hours a day that we could be peaceful and happy and free with each other. If we don't practice them, we don't stand a chance. We're at each other's throat continually. Can I practice them with my children? If I can, what little time I have left with my children will be good times. If I can't, I try to control, they resist, we have no good times at all. Or we might pick up another hour or two a day there, too. How about on the job with my coworkers? If I can practice these principles with the people I work with, well, I might be peaceful, happy, and free on the job for 8, 10, 12, you know. Aren't we really saying that we have been given the tools to be peaceful, happy, and free 24 hours a day, 365 days a year if we wish to? Make no mistake, though. God's not going to do this for you. Other people are not going to do this for you. But you can, with the help of God and other human beings, be peaceful, happy, and free every day for the rest of your life. I think we're the luckiest people in the world. Most people out there are sick. Most of them are going to the grave sick. They don't even know what's wrong with them. We not only know what's wrong with us, we have a solution to that problem, and we have a program of action where we can be peaceful and happy and free every day for the rest of our lives if we wish to. Very few people have that opportunity. Let's go to page 164. We'll close there with the last couple of paragraphs.
It's been a real special weekend for me. As I look around at all these pictures, I'm reminded of what Dr. Bob told us. He said, this program, you can reduce it down to two words, love and service. And certainly those people have done that for us in the past. And Charlie and Joe, and through love and service, helped me. And I'm grateful for that.
He's going to have me crying here in a minute. I'm not careful. Joe, you want to read these last two paragraphs?
Yeah. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize that we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God.
We did that in steps 1, 2, and 3.
Admit your faults to him and to your family.
We did that in 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Clear away the wreckage of the past.
We did that in 8 and 9.
Give freely what you find and join us.
We'll do that in 10, 11, and 12.
We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
We love you all.
God bless.
Thank you for letting us be here this weekend.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.